Legal disclaimer. Stamp Show here today, its affiliates and organizations are not responsible for any maiming, dismemberment, or physical injury from listening to this podcast. It is suggested that all listeners wear proper head protection and fasten all seat belts. Discontinue use if rash develops. Ask your physician if Stamp Show Here Today is right for you.
Live from the Stamp Show Here Today infotainment complex, this is the award-winning Stamp Show Here Today. If you can dream it, we can collect it. Brought to you by the Southern Nevada Philatelic Research Center, a nonprofit 501c3 corporation for the advancement of philately. You can support this Liz Tosh by joining the Stamp Show Here Today community. The cost is only $10 for a lifetime membership. We are an APS-affiliated club. Listen to the end credits for information on joining. This is Cash.
This is Mark.
This is Jim.
And I want to give a shout out to two brand new members we have. Hi to Avery P. and Kayla P. Avery is 10 years old and Kayla is 8 years old. And they just they sent pictures of them buying some stamps at a stamp club. And it very, very cool to have young members.
Excellent.
Yeah, really good value for your whole life.
Yeah, so yeah. They're going to cash in on this lifetime membership. So I had an interesting thing show up here at PSE. It was a Federal Express. And we get Federal Express all the time. As a matter of fact, if you ship expensive stuff, it's, in my opinion, safer to ship by Federal Express than by registered U.S. mail, and it's also a lot cheaper. Though registered mail will give you insurance, whereas Federal Express will not. But anyway, we got a Federal Express, and it had a little tracking device, a little thumb drive, a little AirTag inside of a little plastic bag on the front of the envelope. So it was a normal Federal Express envelope with a normal address label, and then it had like a little plastic envelope with an AirTag in it. And the AirTag had Federal Express logo on it and a QR code and all that stuff. So it was a official Federal Express tracking device. And so I gave it to Lloyd, who does the shipping here, who's also an expert, but he does the shipping, and I gave it to him to take it down to Federal Express and, you know, ask, how do you get this? I haven't seen this as a service, and this seems really, really great because, you know, if you're missing the package, you have an AirTag that you can figure out where it is. Well, it's only available on non-Federal Express stores that do Federal Expresses. So it's like the offshoot stores, Federal Express kind of doesn't trust them. But when they do just like a retail store. But I was thinking, that is such a good idea. I wish they would do that with regular FedEx, you know, pay an extra couple bucks and get the actual tracker attached to it. Well, I went on Amazon to see how much AirTags actually cost. And the AirTags themselves are really cheap, you know, maybe like $3. And you buy them in like groups of five. So, you know, five of them for 15 bucks. You then have to pay for the service to track it. But the service to track your AirTags is relatively cheap. It's like 15 bucks a month or something like that. And you would only buy it for, you know, the month that you're shipping the package. But if you're sending something really expensive, throw a $3 AirTag in it, pay the $15. For $18, you have really, really, really good tracking. And $18 plus $9 is $28. $9 is priority mail cost. So for $28, you have really secure, no insurance, but really secure tracking on where your package is.
But it's real-time GPS.
It's real-time GPS. You can literally open it up and say, wow, this is moving at 60 miles an hour up the I-80 freeway.
Right.
You know, I know where my package is. And so I'm surprised that it hasn't caught on at all. Maybe 28 bucks is too much for people to pay. However, realistically, $28 is how much a normal Federal Express package costs. And, you know, it's like $15 for the tracking. In the end, you know, you say, hey, Marina, when you ship me back my order, send me back my AirTag with it also, please.
Well, you could do this for kids that you put on airplanes.
Yeah, they do it for kids and pets. And the thing that they always advertise is attach it to your car keys and you always know where your car keys are. It's like, I don't have that problem. You know, it's like, and, you know, you could put it in the back of your cell phone. But I just go, well, you know, I can't find my cell phone. Hey, Don, call my phone. Then you hear where it rings and you go get it. But if you want to be high tech, you know, you can use these AirTags for a lot of other stuff. But I was thinking, you know, for using it for shipping expensive stamps, that's a really, really big benefit. So anyway, I'm going to say that that is what crossed my desk, even though it's actually what crossed Marina's desk. So, Mark, what crossed your desk?
Well, I had a couple of coils that were submitted. These are the 1057, the 3-cent Lincoln, and they're tagged. And the person had two examples. They were both tagged. One had a much brighter tag than the other, and then the color was also different between the two. And so the submitter thought, oh, this obviously I have a look coil, and I have the philatelic reprint.
That's, oh, hold on. Did you say Lincoln or Liberty?
Liberty.
Liberty. Oh, yeah.
From the Liberty series. With LI. But
Liberty. Yeah, the 3-cent Liberty stamp from 1954. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
We finally got the right description and the right year.
Right.
Moving on.
Except that the tagged versions were in the 60s.
Oh, okay.
So the Look magazine version, 1966, and then you have the philatelic reprint, which is from 1967.
And why did they call them the Look version?
There was a special,
special order.
Yeah, a special order
Look magazine.
for specifically printed for Look magazine.
Yeah, what Look magazine did is they sent people actual envelopes with the stamp on it for them to mail them the check. So you'd renew your subscription. They would send you a subscription renewal that had an envelope in it that had a stamp already on it. All you had to do was throw your money in or your check in and mail it back. You didn't have to do anything else.
And at this time, that 3-cent stamp was not tagged. But when they did them in 1966, they printed this in rolls of 3,000 and tagged them.
Yep.
So
and they're always rolls of 3,000. The other ones are not.
Right. And so what you had was a new variety. Collectors then started saying, hey, we want some of those too. Hence the philatelic version.
Right. So the post office said, yeah, you're right. We can't give these just a look. We have to make everything. There's a rule. We have to have everything available to everybody. Well, they printed all the Look coils, and then they gave them to Look magazine. Look was a very popular magazine back then. I think that our young, you know, our two new members today are going to have no clue what Look magazine was. But us old folks, we remember seeing Look magazine. So, yeah, all of them went. The collectors found them. They said, hey, I want some. And so the post office said, crap, we have to make some of these, don't we? Okay, let's make them.
This was the I was just going to say, this is the same people that did the Invert Dag Hammarskjöld reprint.
Exactly.
The same era.
Yeah, era.
Yeah. So this was the egalitarian movement.
Tell them about the Dag Hammarskjöld real quick.
Oh, well, that a fortunate philatelist bought a new sheet of Dag Hammarskjöld stamps, and it was inverted. The yellow color was inverted.
Yeah, there was a yellow background.
Yeah, and, you know, he voiced his find around, and got back to
excited.
Yeah, word got back to the post office, and they said, well, we can't have somebody winning the lottery like that. So they printed up a whole run of inverts, And so everybody can have a look or a Dag Hammarskjöld invert. So this is similar to that in the sense that collectors demanded that they get some too, and so they made another philatelic run. The fortunate thing about it is, Mark.
Right. So what the Scott catalog says about it is the original tag printing, number 1057, has a less intense color, the impression is less sharp, and the tagging is brighter.
And which doesn't help at all because you're comparing it to another thing that a person may not have.
Right. So this person had two coils. They were obviously different colors, and they were obviously, one was obviously tagged brighter than the other. And so he thought, oh, I've got the look. So he sent them in and to get certs so that he had an example of a look and an example of the philatelic reprint. The problem was is that both of his stamps were philatelic reprint.
And just as a note, again, we're not talking about anything you can see with your regular eye. This is the tagging, which is only available to you under UV light.
Right. So the example that I have, my reference copy, when I compared it to these other two, the tagging on my reference copy is noticeably brighter, and the color is different from the other two as well. It's a less intense color than the other two. It's a duller shade of purple. But the other thing that is not in the catalog, which I've noticed looking at the look coil and the philatelic reprint, is that under UV, the impression for the philatelic reprint looks fuzzy.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas on the look coil, when you put it under UV, the purple impression looks sharp.
Here is how I tell them apart with my, and I have reference collection and everything like that. First of all, you need the shortwave UV light to look at the tagging. So the tagging is sort of greenish. Forget whether it's brighter or darker because you're not comparing it to anything. If you have just one stamp, put it under the UV light. And then at the bottom, it says Liberty. It's a 3-cent stamp, has 3 cents, Statue of Liberty, and on the bottom it literally has the word Liberty. The look coil, under UV light, you can read the word Liberty. On the philatelic reprint, the word Liberty is not readable. It is very fuzzy. The middle, as a matter of fact, the middle letters, because they're smaller, I mean, the L up front, you can see better, but the middle letters are almost blurred out. You almost can't see them at all. So if you get one, you put it under UV light. If you can read the word Liberty, you most likely have a look. If you cannot read the word Liberty, guaranteed you have the philatelic reprint.
So pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah. So somebody submitted these in and both of them bounced.
Right.
Because we actually did get a full roll. A person sent in a roll of 3,000.
Wow.
This was way back. I'm going to say this was 6 or 7 years ago. It was right after I think we moved here to Las Vegas. And it was an entire roll of 3,000. And he got them all certified in strips of 8. Now then, obviously, what he did was he took the certificate for a strip of 8 and he put it into pairs and said, you have the left one or the right one or whatever.
Right.
But he got hundreds and hundreds of certificates. And it's like, well, you don't have to sell 3,000. You just have to sell 1,500 of them, though.
Right.
And, of course, you know, he pulled out all the line pairs because those were the really valuable. What's a line pair of a look catalog right now?
Let's see. The line pair is $350.
Yep. And how much is a single?
And the single is $8.
Yep.
And
as compared to the philatelic reprint, $1.
Yep. And look at what it is on cover.
And on cover, $10,000.
There you go.
But again, the cover. Okay, so here's the drawback of the covers. When they went to Look Magazine, they all got thrown in the trash.
Yeah.
So generally speaking, on cover, they're always on a Look magazine envelope. And generally speaking, they're unused. But they are listed as used because they're on. But finding a Look magazine envelope with a 3 cent stamp on it, be aware you might have won a small part of the lottery.
The lottery.
Yeah.
Because that's the real lottery item.
Well, lotteries are in the millions. This is in the 10,000s, but still, 10,000 is 10,000. And honestly, they sell for that much. That's the surprising thing.
Yep. So the submitter is going to be really scratching their head because when they look at their stamps under UV and regular white light, they say these got to be different.
Yeah.
And they are different. They're just not called out in the catalog.
Yeah, they're different in the same print run.
Yeah, sort of like the 563, the 11 cent haze. You know, you think, oh, there's like a dozen different stamps here, but no, they're all the same.
Yep. Same except catalog. For the one that I really like, which is the first print run, which is a nice peacock blue, and all the rest are ugly bluish greenish.
Yeah.
They range from bluish green to greenish blue. Like. Have them
they need to label them like swamp water blue.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. So, Jim, what crossed your desk?
Well, I had an interesting thing cross my desk, and this is in revenue, U.S. revenue stamps. And we haven't really talked a lot about revenue stamps lately, but the revenue stamps were issued in the Civil War era to raise money to pay for, obviously, the war. And they went on documents and different things. And initially, when these were issued, they were issued rapidly. And so you had part perforation, imperforates, part perforations, double perforations. I mean, you had all kinds of things that happened to the stamps. Well, we see them come through here. The Scott catalog has these in a general philosophy or a general range of the Scott catalog number, and this one that was submitted was R64. And then there's three letters. There's A, B, or C. The A is imperforate, always. The B letter is part perforation, always. And the C is perforated all around. This particular item that was submitted has been trimmed very, very close to the actual design. And as was submitted as a C, I'm sorry, as an A, which would have made that an imperf variety. By the way, just the A is the most valuable. The imperf is the most valuable. The part perf is the next. And then the C, which is the perfs all around, are the most common. And generally what happens is we see these come through because the perfs have been trimmed off of a perforated copy. So I like to call this the R64 that began life as a C, had an operation performed, and was turned into an A. And the formerly known as 162 or R62 64C. Is what we end up calling this. The margins are too tight to definitively say that it hasn't been trimmed down. You have to have a really good knowledge of it. You can determine that the stamp is an imperf with narrow margins depending on the paper and depending on the date of issue, if the date is on the cancel. Most of the revenue stamps are pen canceled, and they have, a lot of them have dates.
Do these have dates on them?
This particular one has a very light pen cancel, and I cannot see a date.
Yeah, it's too light to see.
So.
Or it's been lightened.
Yeah, and some of the, because it's an orange stamp, I guess it could have been subjected to sulfur and then peroxided, and the ink would fade.
Yeah, if you're going to doctor a stamp, you may as well doctor it well.
Yeah. And I mean, it doesn't look like a mint stamp. It still looks like it's got a cancel on it, but it's just very hard to read. The telltale sign on this one is under magnification on the margins, you can see little perf dents. And that's the telltale sign that kills the thing.
Yeah. Well, they're little divots that remarkably gauge.
Gauge perfectly to 15 or whatever they're gauge.
To the perforations that used to be there.
So, yeah, it was... the most interesting thing I find about these is that a lot of stamps that are submitted... as the part perf or the imperf are indeed original, genuine part perf and imperf stamps. But every once in a while, we get one of these that's been trimmed down.
Yeah, so if you're collecting... motivation for it, too, because as a C, it catalogs like $9, but as an A, it catalogs $120.
Right. There's a big motivation. And also, I think when you're... a junior collector or a young collector, you could say, oh, I could trim that just a little bit, and then I have the nice-looking one, you know? And so inadvertently creating something that later on in life somebody else buys when you pass it on and does not realize that you've tampered with it. But I just thought it was an interesting topic to discuss because many of you probably see these revenue stamps, and you wonder, oh, is that the rare variety or not? So this is the two ways to tell it is if you have a date on the stamp, the imperfs were the first issue, and by 1863, 64, they were...
I think...
65, somewhere
Mark,
in there.
Mark,
I yeah, don't, I mean, 18, yeah. 1862 is when they were... when they were first issued, imperf and part perf,
and they were done quickly, and so they just said, "Whatever you got, get it out here."
Yeah.
By the way, Don walked in. Hi, Don. Say hi to everybody.
Hi, everybody.
So in the beginning, they did this to raise money, and there's a lot of very interesting stories about this issue, but. They just said, hey, you know, give us everything. And so they go, well, these are done here. Oh, what about the rest? It's like, well, they're not perforated. Give them to me anyway. Nobody cares. It's accounting paper.
Yeah.
And so, you know, ones that were half perforated, ship them on in. How about the ones that are imperforated? Yeah, ship those down too. And so they had a flood in the beginning, in the first. And in the beginning, they used... kind of a different type of paper than they used at the end, and the colors changed over time. So you can tell if you have references from the what color an actual imperf should be and what date it should be versus, you know, one where somebody hacked off the perfs.
And I want to be perfectly clear on this, too. It's not that the date is a sole indicator. Because obviously, as we know, people, the 2 or 3 cents or 10 cents was a lot of money in those days, and so they would keep the stamps. So it's just an indicator that you need to look at other things to make sure that what you're looking at is a true imperf.
And to continue on what you just said there, a lot they had no clue how many manifest stamps they would need versus proprietary stamps. So all of a sudden they go, we're out of proprietary stamps. You go, well, what do you want me to do? It's like, well, I want you to print up a bunch more. You go, well, when will you, I get them a month and a half from now. They go, that's not good enough. You go, well, I got a bunch of manifest stamps. It's like, give me those.
Yeah. And the same denomination. Why not?
And originally they did it so they can track how much money do we get from imports? How much do we get from exports? How much do we get from insurance documents? How much do we get from manifests? In the end, they just said, give me the friggin' money. I don't care what's on the stamp. And the interesting thing, the story that I love from an economic standpoint is there should be one more revenue stamp. And it should have been a photography stamp or a photo stamp. Because if you look at the original law, they had all these categories, warehouses, you know, tax this much, manifest, tax this much, and insurance policies, tax this much. And every single category got a stamp with that notation on it, except for photographs. And so photographs, they started using proprietary stamps, but they ran out of those quickly. So on photographs, you'll find every single stamp. The hitches that photographs, I think, topped out at 4 cents. There was a 4 cents tax if it was a 25-cent photograph. And so you won't find any higher denominations, but you'll find lots of lower ones. And so you'll find 2-cent bank checks on them all the time and stuff like that. But it's very 2-cent Express. That was a good one because Express was paid for weird stuff that never was 2 cents. It was always more than 2 cents unless the Express was shipping just a document or something, a piece of mail or whatever. But, I mean, it's doable, and I did it, but you can actually search online and find the document, and it'll give the breakdown, and it explains exactly why all these denominations exist. Because you look at it and go, a $1.20 revenue stamp? What the hell is that for? And you pull it up, and it goes, a receipt from a warehouse shall... for imported goods will be $1.20. So all they needed was $1.20 stamps.
Yeah, so we get weird denominations and very high denominations as the revenue stamps kicked in. So it's a very interesting hobby or niche in the hobby. Mark is our resident revenue guy.
Well, you have them. Do you have all of them complete?
Well, all of the dated reds I have complete.
Oh.
So the documentary I have complete. The dated greens, you have to be very, very well off to have a complete set. I'm missing, I think, 13.
Oh, very good.
So, but the other interesting thing about Jim's stamp is that it's a very well-centered stamp. So when it started life as a perforated stamp, it was perforated all around and had generous margins. And the odd thing is, if they would have left the stamp alone today, it would have graded probably a 90 or a 95, and it would have been worth far more than the imperf, you know, as a graded stamp.
Fun stuff. So, Don, what crossed your desk?
Couple of things. I had a 10X1 and a 10X2.
And those are?
I have never seen a real one. They have always come across my desk as counterfeit.
Reprints or counterfeits?
Yeah. Counterfeit.
Yeah, they are very commonly counterfeited. Again, when you get into the early provisionals, it wasn't illegal to print them. You couldn't print a U.S. stamp, but these were kind of never U.S. stamps.
So is that the Providence?
Yeah, Providence, Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And what's interesting is the on the actual sheet, the real sheet, it's a sheet of 9, I believe.
Yes, 9.
Right, but only the upper right stamp is the 10-cent. But I've seen sheets being sold like on eBay and so forth, where it's a sheet of 10-cent.
Right. They didn't do their homework when they counterfeited.
Whoopsies.
But yeah,
that's an interesting thing though, because you can get a pair, one's a 5 and one's a 10.
Yep.
Because if you get that position.
And as a matter of fact, they also printed initials, or not really initials, printed letters on the back of them on the originals to try to prevent counterfeiting and stuff, because it's just a black stamp that doesn't have a lot of detail to it. So it's tough. For those who don't know, it's got... like design around. It's a round stamp. Or excuse me, right. The center.
It's a rectangular stamp.
The center is round. Mm-hmm. It says
oval.
Oval. It has like filigree around it.
Mm-hmm.
Not really that tough to, you know, not counterfeit. I mean, somebody who wanted to counterfeit it could counterfeit it. But the interesting thing is that a vast majority, this was a really, really super rare stamp. And then a person found a house where they had used these to wallpaper a wall. So they literally had a wall covered with these stamps. And so somebody went in there and they, you know, steamed them all off the wall. So none of them have gum. I mean, what's the price of one with gum?
The price with no gum, let's say a 10X1, is 200, whereas the gum stamp is 350.
350? That's it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's way under. That it should be more than that. But they just had hundreds of these sheets all over a wall, and that's where the vast majority of them all came from.
Yeah, the reprints, you can tell, because they're a little bit smaller than the actual stamps, although you'd have to have an actual one to compare the size. And also on the reprints, the O is typically really misshapen in Providence, P-R-O-V. The O is like really kind of scrunched up and misshapen, whereas in the real one, it looks like a normal O.
How I tell them very quickly, and it, again, unfortunately, you need a comparison, but the fakes are almost never the correct color.
Yeah.
They're always sort of a dingier color of gray versus a kind of sharp-looking grayish black.
Yeah, because the genuine stamps, and the Scott catalog says, genuine stamps are engraved, whereas most fakes are lithographed.
Yep.
And then in 1898, there were official reprints made.
I was going to say they had the official reprints.
And the official reprints have on the back a letter in, and it's a kind of a metallic color.
Yep.
But the letters on the back spell out Bogert Durbin. And so
I didn't know what they spelled out.
Yeah. Yeah. Bogert Durbin. Oh. Yeah. If you have the whole sheet. Yeah.
Bogert Durbin. I assume that's like
they
a printer.
They used the original sheet for the reprint too, didn't they? The original plate.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
So
that's how they distinguish
them.
Yeah.
And the reprints are actually listed in the catalog with a price. So.
So the person submitted two of them, and they both bounced or
counterfeit.
Yep.
Yeah, they were the fakes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the counterfeits don't have the Bogert Durbin on the back. Yeah.
Well, I had a fellow named Charlie who came in, and we were playing and trading stamps. And I opened up his page, and he had one. And I go, that's not the correct stamp. I go, what is the correct stamp? So I pulled out mine, and, you know, we clearly comparing them side by side. It's like, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he traded me. I traded him like that and a number two and then $2 value Colombians for $1,500 of postage press sheets, full press sheets, which I will use as postage to mail my eBay lots. Fun stuff. An enjoyable hobby.
Let's hear it for the hobby.
Yay!
Yay! And on that note, keep collecting.
We need your help. Nothing on the internet is free, including our phone and internet connections. So you can support the podcast by joining the Stamp Show Here Today Club. The cost is $10 for a lifetime membership. Please include your APS member number, as we are an APS affiliated club. Your support is greatly appreciated. Our brand new spanking address is 5965 Harrison Drive, Suite 6 in Las Vegas, Nevada, 89120.
You left out the word glorious.
Fabulous.
Because you don't put that on the letter.
Oh. Well, you could.
You could, yeah.
You could, yeah.
Well, kids, that's all the time we have for today. I'd like to thank Sideshow Mel, Corporal Punishment, Tina Ballerina, and from Knots Landing, Miss Donna Mills. Oh, she was a sport. We've had lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of fun, but now the time has come to go. If this silkworm was found dead in his bed tomorrow, I'd be in heaven still doing this show. See you some other time!
Stamp collecting happens when we dream together.